Session number 10599, Reel 14.
Major English, Reel 14. You were telling me about the collapse of the ceiling in the Lieutenant Colonel's room, Major.
Yes, well, the Italians were very put out at this and accused Colonel MacDonald of putting all this stuff up there himself, and he obviously knew all about it. The poor man protested that he didn't know anything about it. He didn't know it was up there, anything. Anyway, he was carted away for about 3 months, 3 days solitary. The relations with the Italians, the camp commandant was a regular Italian soldier who, we were told, played bridge for Italy before the war. But he seemed, not that I personally had any dealings with him, but as far as we could gather, he's a man, if fairly strict. He had an English-speaking adjutant called Captain Camino, who, again, was not unreasonable. And we didn't have a great deal of communication with the Italian sentries, although we heard that in some ways they were bribable. They liked our tea very much and would produce various things in exchange for tea. So, generally speaking, in this camp, PG 49, as it was called, at Fontanellato, we had really couldn't complain about our captors. We had a system of camp news, and people who could read Italian gave us a summary of that, reading between the lines. But we also had in the camp a radio, and I think there were only three prisoners in the camp who knew where it was hid. And this had been made out of milk tins and other things like that. And the only thing that had to be imported were the valves. And here, the fact that some Italians, anyway, could be bribed came in, because I believe they smuggled in to us valves for this radio. And soon after I got there, there was an American journalist arrived, whose name I fear I forget, but he had been on the Ark Royal when she had finally been sunk by Germany, and he was taken prisoner, and he arrived, and he proceeded to run the news service. And in the main hall, there was a notice board, and every day items of news. And he always started this with flash, with about three exclamation marks afterwards. And the one I remember most was at the end, just before we got out of the camp, when the news of Mussolini's downfall was received. And his news bulletin that day just simply said, flash, Benito, finito. So this was, of course, an important thing from a morale point of view. Mail from home did arrive, but was very intermittent and took a long time to reach us. We had been allowed, when first captured, to send a little card saying that we'd been captured by the Italians, and I crossed out that out and put Germans, and saying we were all right and we were well treated, being well treated. I think that eventually, but my parents heard about that I was in fact a prisoner because I'd been declared missing. And by a man who lived at Berkeley in County Durham and who listened to the Vatican radio. And the Vatican radio put out lists of British prisoners who were in Italy. And he rang my father up to say that my name had been amongst them, and that was quite enough for my father. He was then absolutely happy, although we had heard nothing at all from the War Office. Well, we came to the 8th of September. Now, I'd been taken prisoner on the 23rd of March. We left Tunisia, I think, in the first few days of April, and we were at Capua for probably about 3 weeks. And so we had been at Fontanellato from end of April, beginning of May. Well, on the 8th of September, about 6 o'clock in the evening, there were several rooms, and I was lying reading, and there seemed to be quite a commotion outside amongst the Italians, and one of our number got up and listened, and he said, "Surely they're shouting Pace," and we all got to the windows, and that was true. They were shouting Pace and Armistizia and dancing round and throwing their hats in the air and hugging each other. And we thought, well, that was what we would do if we'd won the war, perhaps. But anyway, the next day, well, that evening, in fact, the armistice between the Allies and Italy was confirmed, and we were told to be dignified and quiet. There was a danger that the Germans might attempt to take the camp over, but obviously this was the day really we'd all been waiting for. On the next day, we woke up to see the Italian guards setting up machine guns and this sort of thing on the turrets round the camp where the sentries stood. And I thought this was rather unnerving, but we didn't know or possibly shoot at a German attack. And apparently a German attack was expected. But later, all the Italians seemed to disappear, and I think they had demobilized themselves and walked off and gone home. And there was only left the camp commandant, and particularly in the adjutant. And at about 12:30, we were ordered to parade outside in our companies and platoons, and having collected the haversack ration. And from there, we marched out of the camp through the wires that had been cut by the Italians, marched out in threes. So in no way, really, was it an escape. It was, we merely got up and walked. And we marched about 3 miles out into the countryside into what was known as the Bund, which was an area of low-lying land with intersected by watercourses and rivers and with high banks and quite a bit of tree cover. And there the whole camp dispersed themselves along this Bund. I, as I said, was the adjutant of one of the companies, who the company commander was actually a Colonel Everett, who had been adjutant of the 8th Dillai pre-war. And I was really quite busy helping him to organise things and going to conferences and this sort of thing. Anyway, there we were, and we settled down for the night. The mosquitoes were bad, I seem to remember. Now, the next day, quite a lot of the locals brought food, and we certainly didn't go hungry. And then on the 11th of September, it decided that we were far too big a party, and those who wished to were going to move off towards Switzerland, were going to be billeted. I think there was about 30 men for each company who were going to be billeted by the Italians on neighbouring farms. And the others could either stay or move off as they wished.
Had you any idea where the Germans were at this time?
No, we didn't. We had no very good information. We did hear that they were coming into Italy in fairly large numbers as fast as they could. I think it's probable that at that time they were intent on seizing the key points and communications further to the south of us, but undoubtedly they did take over a number of camps, the one at on the east side, near Pescara, whose name I just forget. Germans arrived and carted everyone back to Germany, and so they were anxious to prevent British prisoners of war, of which I believe there were about 50,000 in Italy, and prevent them getting away. Well, now I was keen to not to hang about, and if possible to move up into the hills. And with me was a subaltern called Scotty White, who had been in the 9th Battalion and who had been at Newcastle University the same time as I'd been there for a year. He was doing zoology and I was doing agriculture. And so we teamed up, and I thought it would probably be a good idea. And there was one doctor we knew fairly well called Jimmy James, and he agreed to come with us. The rumours, of course, were flying round. The British had landed here, there and everywhere. And also, one or two people had been up towards the main road, that's the Via Emilia, which runs right across the plain of Lombardy, and the main railway from the north going along parallel to it. That one or two people had said, and the Italians had said, that this was extremely difficult to cross because of the Germans on it. And the others think to the hills, which meant crossing that road, was going to be too dangerous, and we ought to set off south. Well, I was rather against that because the rivers, of which there are so many, running from the Apennines onto the east coast of Italy, would be much bigger, would be more difficult to cross. And also the in our immediate path were difficult. Anyway, we tried to do that. And just before we set off, there was a subaltern in the Northumberland Hussars who had been with one or two others of his regiment and also the South Notts Hussars. But they seemed to be undecided and wanted to stay where they were. And so he joined us. I knew him quite well. He'd been in the same room with us, and so that made four of us. And we set off southeast, having a lot of trouble moving at night, crossing these various watercourses. And eventually we landed up at a mill, and the miller's family were very good to us. We stayed there a couple of days, living out in the country, and they brought us food. And they also brought us a couple of maps of the area, which was absolutely invaluable, and a little compass. So we were really well set up. There were a lot of Italian soldiers who would demobilize themselves, a lot of them wandering about. Anyway, after some discussion, on the 13th of September, we set off on the original plan and went back the way we'd come, and just past Fontanellato on our right, moving at night and going pretty well. When we came to the railway, we heard some German voices, but there was a train passing, and so we came up to it under the noise of this train, the cover of that, and managed to cross the railway all right. And then we'd been trying to avoid a village on the main road, but we must have missed our direction a little bit because we landed up in the middle of this village. Anyway, there was nothing else for it but to keep going. And so we crossed the main road and set off for the hills, without too much bother. And for the next month, I suppose, or 3 weeks to a month, was a period of considerable indecision, really. We hung about moving from one farm to another, and perhaps one village to another, in the lower hills, the Apennines, and the rumours were tremendous. We'd landed at Livorno and even La Spezia and Trieste, and if this was true, well, there really wasn't any point in walking, and we didn't know what to do. And then on the, I think it was about the 4th of October, we had met, of course, a number of British prisoners, both other ranks and officers, indeed one or two from the camp that we'd been in. And we heard of an oldish British soldier who was very ill in a farm a mile or two away, and Jimmy James went to see him. And this man was in his late 40s, and he was pretty desperate. And Jimmy diagnosed a perforated appendix. Well, we walked to another small town and to try and get a doctor, and he wasn't there. And there was only one answer then, in fact, was to take him back to the main, to a railway station, which was on the main line to Parma, and to see that he got on this train and take him to hospital, because if he didn't have an operation certainly within 24 to 36 hours, he'd be dead. And of course at this station were Germans. Well, Jimmy James took him down and he, of course, was recaptured, which was very sad. Well, we waited about for about a week just to see that he hadn't been able to get away. And then we all agreed on something which I'd been keen to do for a long time, and that was to start walking south. And we set off on the 10th of October, and we walked every day, I think bar 3 days when we were snowed up. We did various distances. I suppose we averaged about 12 miles a day, which doesn't sound a lot, but we were always being accosted by people and asking what we were doing. And also we went up to people and asked for news or perhaps asked for something to eat. And although some days we did, one or two days we did 20 miles, so going was good. But that was that was about our average. We determined to keep on the east side of the Apennines, but fairly well up in the hills, because the rivers would be narrower and easier to cross. And we avoided towns as well as we could, and we avoided main roads. And we kept direction. The maps we'd been given, of course, were very valuable, but we ran out of them after a bit. And we used to go to, say, a priest who might have a map, and ask to see his, or maybe some important person in a village had a map. And we would make a note of the places on in the general direction which we were going, and then we would ask the way from one village to another. So we kept pretty well on the way we'd had intended. Now we marched for 6 weeks from Pesolo, was the place we were in Parma province, down to a village called Corvara in the Abruzzi, just north of the Pescara River, and that was 574 kilometres. It was very pleasant at first. The weather was pretty good, and we were walking on good tracks. And apart from our footwear, which began to give us increasing trouble, totally wearing out eventually, we got on pretty well. And then, of course, in November, the weather got worse, and things didn't weren't so easy. And sometimes it was a job to go on. The Italians, peasants, were absolutely wonderful. Almost all of them. They looked after a large number of prisoners of war, taking the picture as a whole. And we found that in the great majority of cases, if we asked for food of one sort or another, we got it. In many cases, they showed us where to hide or stay for the night. And they provided what food they could. Well, now, their standard of life, particularly the peasants in the hills, was not good. And the farms were bare in most cases, and they were struggling to make a reasonable living. They were fantastically hard working. You would see both men and more particularly women carrying enormous loads up and down these hills. And there were one or two who were too frightened to help us, which one can well understand, but the majority gave us succor one sort or another. Occasionally we were very lucky, and in that we slept in a bed. I think about three times during the trip we slept in a bed. Generally it was in the loft on straw, and apart from the odd rat and a few drafts coming in, we were all right. At one farm, the farmer spoke fairly good English with an American accent, and when we were asked to sit down to the meal, we realized why, because on the cutlery was marked the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, New York. So he had been a waiter. In one or two other cases, we met Italians who had been in London at one time or another. And in fact, in one case, one man had a cafe in the East End of London and left there on the 1st of September, 39. They always asked us where we came from. And unless we said we came from London, they didn't really believe it. I mean, as far as they were concerned, it was London. England was London. And if we said we came from County Durham, they obviously can't come from England. We had really no trouble at all until we were getting Passo, which is in fact the highest range of mountains in Italy, and there we ran into snow, and for 3 days we were held up by the weather, and then on the fourth day it wasn't very good, but we decided to push on. And although we had to wade waist deep in some snow going over the pass, we managed it and came down to lower ground and were able to dry out. The rivers were a bit of a problem. In many cases we had to wade them because we were just frightened about the bridges, or there was definite evidence of German transport on the roads. Most of the way we had been marching still in our battle dress, and Scotty White was a fair-haired lad, and sometimes seeing this chap coming along in khaki with fair hair, the villagers thought he was a German and immediately ran off. Some, I regret to say, made a fuss of us. And then when they discovered we were British and not Germans, they rather changed their tune. But those were sort of people that were in the minority. We didn't run into Germans at all on this stage of the walk.